review with you some of our procedures, particularly for those of you who are new to town meeting. So there'll be no smoking in the hall. Please turn off all your cell phones and, for that matter, any device that emits a noise. Please give your name and address for the record each time that you speak, that you're recognized to speak. And if you desire to be recognized, please raise your hand. Do not stand near a mic. Instead, just sit in your seat. I will recognize you, and one of the Boy Scouts will bring you a mic. The mics are already on, so there's no need to... just wait about 2 seconds, and you can begin speaking, first with your name and address. And again, the reason why we use the Boy Scouts, and we're grateful to them for it, is because these rows were designed with no aisle breaks. So it's very difficult for anyone sitting in the middle who wants to say something to get out to a microphone. So instead, we have the Boy Scouts pass the microphones in. All motions of substance, including motions to amend, must be in writing and delivered to me, the town clerk, and Mark Thompson at the ViewGraph before you are recognized to make the motion or amendment. In addition, only registered voters of the town of Sudbury and non-resident employees and representatives of the town may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows in the rear of the auditorium, to my left and right. And one thing of importance, we only have two articles tonight. So I urge those of you who came here to hear Article 1 on the noise school building, that's a special interest to you, please don't leave after the vote, because your neighbors who may be interested in Article 2 have sat through your article and have been respectful of you enough to stay for the vote there. You should be respectful enough of them to stay for the vote on their article. I'm encouraging those of you who don't speak very often or not at all to speak. Please be reminded that if you present an article, the bylaws says that you have a total of 10 minutes, and folks who want to speak thereafter have a total of 5 minutes. Please plan accordingly, because the hall doesn't exceed to request to exceed those limits very freely. And if you're a presenter of a motion, unless you're going to move in the words of the article, as printed in the warrant, every presenter must tell the hall the differences between the motion he or she is making and the warrant that the voters saw in the article that voters saw in the warrant. This is so that when you come to vote, you'll know exactly what the difference is between what you saw in the warrant and what you're actually going to vote on. Counting, unfortunately, takes considerably longer in this auditorium for the same reason I mentioned before. There's no aisle breaks. It's very difficult for the tellers to count all the folks who are voting if there's a standing count. So I assure you that unless you're certain that I miscalculated, I assure you that I myself will ask for a standing teller count if there's any doubt whatsoever. I'll also announce the percentage of vote for a passage of a motion before the vote takes place. Just like to remind you that there's no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against a speaker before, during, or after the presentation. Speakers may not make any disrespectful remarks, whether directed at a voter, a speaker, or a town official or a town employee. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on every article. Your job as a legislator is to ensure goodwill and respect for views that are different than yours. I'm pleased to call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my honor to be your moderator at this special town meeting. I've just been handed a note from the town clerk stating that a quorum has been reached. Fire chief wants me to announce that there are two emergency exits in the doors that you came in the rear of the auditorium. In addition, if there were an emergency, you may come up on either side of the stage and exit through the back. Would you all please rise? I'd like you to join Steve and Millie for a moment of silence here in front for his son, Lieutenant Scott Millie, who died in Afghanistan on November 30th, 2010, in the service of our country. Please remain standing. Steve will now lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Steve. The certified free cash, according to the town accountant, Barbara Chisholm, is $249,418. I also announce that I've examined and found in order the call of this meeting, the office's return of service, and confirmation of mailing the warrant to all the residents. I would ask John Drabinski, Chair of the Board of Selectmen, for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of this meeting, the office's return of service, notice, and the individual articles of the warrant.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. So moved.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your hand. All those opposed, it's unanimous. Unfortunately, there are no coffee or snacks tonight. And also, bathrooms are across the hall from the auditorium. If anybody needs a warrant, doesn't have one, please raise your hand and we'll have the Boy Scouts deliver them to you at your seat. So please raise your hand if you need a warrant. Boy Scouts, do you have those warrants? Keep raising your hands, please, and you can pass them straight back. And while they're doing that, please thank Boy Scout Troop 63. Their leader is Fred Rust, and the Boy Scouts who are running the mics and handing out these warrants. I have Mark Tentarelli, Nicholas Ackley, and Alex Benton. Hang on. Mark,
there's people way back there. You can go back there and just pass it along.
Thank you for your patience. Just if you keep your hands up, they'll see you and send some warrants your way. While we're waiting to do that, I'd like to introduce those town officials who are involved in town meeting. Please raise your hand when you hear your name. If your back is to the audience, please stand, turn around, and raise your hand. To my right is the town clerk, Rosemary Harvell. To her right is the assistant town clerk, Judy Newton. To my left are the selectmen, John Drabinski, chair, Larry O'Brien, and I believe his first town meeting as a selectman, Bob Hardy. Town manager is Maureen Valente. Town accountant is Barbara Chisholm. Assistant town accountant, Robin Porcella. Town council to my immediate left is Paul Kenny. At the view graph is Mary McCormick, the Administrative Assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Patty Golden is the Supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones, who manages the town's legal department. Mark Thompson, our Technology Administrator. And I know he was here earlier, but I don't know where he is now. Brian Powell, his assistant. I'd also like to thank the entire LSAV staff and building staff, including Chuck and Kevin. Also, the folks at the camera tonight, is Cliff, Nick, and back at the studio is Lynn Poirot. Finance Committee on the stage to my far left is Bob Jacobson, Jamie Gossels, Bob Stein, Tammy Dufault, Bill Nealon Jr., Marty Raganese, Jim Rayo, the chairman, Chuck Woodard, Joan Carlton. Assistant town manager in the first row is Marianne Bilodeau. Director of assessing is Maureen Hafner. And did I miss anyone who's involved in town meeting? Oh, no. Andrea Turkelson? She's involved in town meeting? Director of finance, town treasurer, tax collector, Andrea Turkelson. Anybody else? Thank you. Yes. Could you, wherever you're sitting, if there are seats open next to you, please raise your hand. Everybody who's standing there, the fire chief had told me you have to be in a seat. So wherever you see a raised hand, there is a seat available. The auditorium is not open, so you have to sit somewhere here. Keep your hands raised, please. Thank you. Lots of seats available. Lots of seats up front here in the first five rows. John Brackett, who's going to make the motion for Article 1? Why don't you get all set up, and as soon as it quiets down, we'll get you going. Plenty of seats. Wherever you see a raised hand, there's a seat available. Plenty right in the middle there. Great. Thank you very much. We're going to start with Article 1, Jeffrey Beeler of the Sudbury School Committee for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I move that the town of Sudbury appropriate the sum of $2,640,000 for the purpose of the repair replacement of the roof, boilers, and windows, and all expenses connected therewith at the Peter Noyes School, 280 Old Sudbury Road, which proposed repair project would materially extend the useful life of the school and preserve an asset that otherwise is capable of supporting the required educational program. Said sum to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee, School Building Committee, and to meet such appropriation, the treasurer is authorized to borrow the sum or said sum under MGL Chapter 44 or any other enabling authority. If the town of Sudbury acknowledges that the Massachusetts School Building Authority's grant program is a non-entitlement discretionary program based on need as determined by the MSBA, and any project costs the town of Sudbury incurs in excess of the grant approved by and received from the MSBA shall be the sole responsibility of the town of Sudbury, provided further that any grant that the town of Sudbury may receive from the MSBA for the project shall not exceed the lesser of 35.42% of eligible approved project costs as determined by the MSBA, or the total maximum grant determined by the MSBA, provided that the appropriation hereunder shall be subject to and contingent upon an affirmative vote of the town to exempt the amounts required for the payment of interest and principal on said borrowing from the limitations on taxes imposed by MGL Chapter 59, Section 21C, Proposition 2.5, and that the amount of borrowing authorized pursuant to this vote shall be reduced by any grant amount set forth in the project funding agreement that may be executed between the Town of Sudbury and the MSBA.
Does that receive a second?
It does.
Mr. Beeler, for an explanation of the difference between this motion and what the voters are on the warrant, followed by your presentation.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. There are four changes, primarily, between the motion it has made and what was circulated in the warrant. The numbers in connection with this article have been generated by the Permanent Building Committee working closely with consultants, including a recently added consultant and an owner's project manager. At the suggestion of the owner's project manager, the sum reflected in the article has been taken from $2.4 million to $2.6 million for two reasons. Number one, the green repair program under which we hope to proceed is currently considering 98 different projects for 98 different municipalities. Not all of them windows, not all of them boilers, et cetera. But it's going to be a lot of work being dropped on Massachusetts all at the same time. It all needs to be completed by 2011. According to the owner's project manager, a slight market adjustment was appropriate as a result of that. The second concern that the owner's project manager brought forth to the Permanent Building Committee was the concern that as we get into this project, we might encounter some hazardous materials. There were two primarily that were concerning to us. Number one was the potential possibility of PCBs and the caulking around the windows. The second was asbestos. Testing was done last week. The good news is we're not dealing with PCBs in the windows. The bad news is we're going to have to deal with some asbestos, which is not unexpected in the building of this age. The worst case estimate from the consultants there is $148,000 in additional monies necessary in order to remediate that. Again, worst case scenario, because of the market condition concern and the hazmat concern, the number was taken from 2.4 to 2.6 million. The second change was to allow the treasurer to borrow the funds, as noted in the changed article, which has been included as required by law. Also, a change has been made to indicate that an affirmative vote on the article is contingent upon passage of a debt exclusion ballot question exempting the borrowed amounts from the levy limits of Proposition 2.5, again, as required by law. And lastly, that the authorized borrowing shall be reduced by any grant amount set forth in a required project funding agreement that may be executed with the MSBA. And with that, we have a 10-minute presentation. Thank you. The noise school. Well, first of all, let me again reiterate something about the numbers. The school committee, of course, has responsibility for the school buildings. None of us are building professionals. The town's permanent building committee is made up of building professionals, engineers, building tradespeople, people with an experience who historically have kept an eye on the town's buildings. They have been involved in this process from day one. They have evaluated all of the numbers, and to the extent you hear numbers tonight, that is a result of their work in connection with consultants who work in this field. Now, I've been asked to do an initial presentation about the proposed noise green repair project. This proposed project, due to the green repair contribution rate for Sudbury of 35.42%, represents Sudbury with a one-time opportunity to get about $920,000 in contributing state funds for repairs that will be needed in any event, since this building will remain as a school for the foreseeable future. My presentation will be a high-level overview of the issues that we're confronting at noise, the green repair program, and the estimated cost of the project. There are a number of people here tonight that will be able to answer questions, and we hope there are many. Members of the Permanent Building Committee are here. Jim Russo from Russo Bar Associates, a building envelope consultant who's worked with the PBC, is here. Our owner's project manager is here. And to the extent that there are questions, these folks are available. Now, on to the noise school. The school was built in 1951. It is the largest elementary school in town, 83,000 or so square feet. It currently educates 647 students. It is both largest as far as size and as far as enrollment. It is the only Sudbury public school that has not undergone a major renovation since 1970. The roof on the building is gone. Depending on the section, it is 25 or 28 years old. It leaks. How do we know that? The same way we know our roofs leak at home. It rains inside. When the water comes in the building, it destroys tiles, stains walls, destroys things underneath it. When you go up on top of the roof, you can see from some of the photos that I trust are scrolling behind me that the roofing seams have deteriorated. There are splits, punctures, cuts in the membrane, water ponding on the roof where we don't want it to happen. When the MSBA inspectors came out to inspect each element of this proposal, both the roof, windows, and boilers, they spent about an hour walking around the roof. It was a day after the rain, and when we were up there, as they were walking across the seams in various areas, you could see water come up out of the roof through the failed seams on this roof in many locations. Now, Russo Bar, at the request of the PVC, has continued to evaluate this project, which has been changing day by day because of the timing requirements imposed by the MSBA since August. Within the last 2 weeks, they went up onto the roof, and they took infrared images of the roof. And the reason for this is that the infrared images will detect greater heat in areas where there might be leaking. Now, if you look at the roof diagram, you can see the various areas where the ovals are indicated, where the ovals are located. That indicates higher heat in those areas, as evidenced by the thermal imaging done by Russo Bar. Now, they went one step further, and they cut into the roof in about 36 or 37 different locations to verify what the infrared imagery was indicating. And in each of those cuts, they found water and moisture on the wrong side of the roofing barrier in each of those areas. And as you can tell, virtually every area of the building is affected with the leaks. That's been verified not just by the infrared imagery, but by the actual roof cuts. So in short, we need a new roof for the Noyes School. And the longer we wait, the worse the problem gets. The recommendation is to tear the old roof off and to replace it with a new roof with stretch energy code level insulation, which will give us an energy savings benefit. And it will also have a new 20-year warranty. Another problem at the Noyes School are the boilers. The boilers are 40 years old, installed in 1970, when the building was last renovated, when an addition was put on. According to the Permanent Building Committee and its engineering consultant, these boilers have exceeded their operational life. Their replacement has been recommended by the PVC, BLW Engineers, who is a consultant for the PVC, and Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources Energy Auditors, who went through the building in 2009. These boilers have been a long-term concern for both the administration and the school committee. They've been on the capital replacement list since 2006. Our concern is that their failure in the winter when they're needed will present major operational concerns for the school and the 647 students that go to this school, since we don't have any other place to educate them. The Sudbury Public Schools believes that it is more prudent to proactively address this issue.
Excuse me. That's just an indication that half your time has gone. It's a 10-minute timer, and 5 minutes have gone.
Well, that was unfair, Mr. Moderator. I thought I was done.
Okay, you're done.
Yeah. I knew that was coming. The Sudbury Public Schools believe it is more prudent to proactively address this issue at a time of our choosing with the MSBA contribution rather than letting their failure dictate when they will be replaced with associated costly and uncontrollable operational disruption. The recommendation is to replace the old boilers with a high-efficiency system, including three new condensing-type boilers. The next element of the proposed project are the windows. There are two types of windows in the building. There's single-glazed windows, one piece of glass, 40 years old. Then there's double-glazed windows, two pieces of glass that provide some insulation. These windows are between 25 and 30 years old. In connection with the single glaze, single pane glass, covers about 4,300 square feet of the building. It accounts for about 55% of the windows. According to the study done by Russo Bar and the experience of the people who work in the building, these windows allow water and air to infiltrate into the building. They're difficult to lock, and they don't operate properly. The double glazed windows account for 45% of the windows. About 45% of them have failed seals. And you can see the haziness of those windows. Those are the double pane windows that have failed seals. What does that mean? Can we see that next slide, John? What that means on this infrared image, if you look at the crosshairs here, the greater red indicates that those failed seals and those double pane or double windows are losing more heat than the adjacent ones. About 50% of these newer windows don't operate due to failed spring balances. You can't open them or they're extremely difficult to operate. The windows pose operational concerns for the schools. Too hot or too cold, depending on season. The windows that don't lock pose a security concern, and those that don't open pose a safety concern. The recommendation is to replace the windows in the building with new, energy-efficient, commercial-grade windows with low-E insulated glass panels. These needs at the Noyes School happen to coincide with a new program that has been rolled out by the Massachusetts School Building Authority. For the first time, they are going to fund these types of repairs that are designed to increase the life of a building like the Noyes School that otherwise is able to do its job. If we address the building envelope and the major systems, it'll be around for the foreseeable future. This program is limited to the repair or replacement of the roofs, windows, and boilers in school buildings that are otherwise structurally, functionally, and educationally sound. The goals of the program are to improve learning environments, reduce energy use, and generate cost savings for districts. At stake for Sudbury, as noted, under this green repair program, which is a one-time stimulus-based program, is 35.42% of eligible approved project costs as determined by the MSBA, and at the $2.6 million number, that's approximately $920,000. There are, as with most programs that offer this type of incentive, requirements imposed by the green repair program and the MSBA. One is that the town of Sudbury must approve the local funding within 90 days of the invitation into the program. That's what drove the need for the special town meeting and the special election next Tuesday. Additionally, the MSBA had to approve the language of the article and warrant, the ballot question, the motion that was used here tonight. The local approval of the funding must be for the entire amount of the project, although Sudbury will only bond its portion of the actual project costs. We will be required, if funding is approved later in the process, to execute a project funding agreement with the MSBA, and we must complete construction within 2011, which, of course, puts this on a very fast track for a municipal project. We recognize that this program in many ways puts the cart before the horse. For example, some of the design work that would have been done in the usual course at our expense has not been done yet. The reason for that is the MSBA program sets it up that way. We need to approve the funding tonight, then proceed to design, which will further refine the scope and the costs of the project. Then there will be this project funding agreement that will be hashed out by the Permanent Building Committee and the MSBA. It somewhat is the cart before the horse, but if we want to take a stab at $920,000 of state money, that's the way it's going to have to be. This project...
Mr. Beeler, how much longer?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. He needs permission of the hall to continue. He needs a majority vote. All those in favor of continuing, raise your hand. All those opposed. Mr. Beeler.
Thank you. This project requires flexibility from everybody involved. Various town committees have already shown their support for it. Everybody who wants to see this happen is going to have to be willing to do some things that they might not otherwise do on an expedited basis. The potential costs of the project, or I'm sorry, potential cost savings of the project. We estimate currently that the project, if all three components are done, will save approximately $50,000 per year from both energy savings and repair savings. This would allow the Sudbury Public Schools the opportunity to divert resources from repairs to preventative maintenance across all of our schools. The estimated project cost is noted, $2.6 million plus $40,000 in bonding costs. 35.42% of eligible approved costs would be paid by the MSBA, which, again, at the $2.6 million estimate, is about $920,000. The net cost to Sudbury, about $1.7 million, which would be bonded over 10 years. The estimated debt service, 6 cents per $1,000 of property assessment, and on the average property assessed at $628,000, that would be $37 a year in year one, declining to a low of $28 per year over the 10-year bond period. Each element of this program has been reviewed by the Permanent Building Committee, consulting engineering firms, the Mass School Building Authority, which after inspection of the building and all three of its elements invited Sudbury into the program for all three components, and DOER energy auditors. This is a rare one-time opportunity to get significant state assistance to make substantial repairs to critical systems and the building envelope. Approval of the project would be a timely, prudent, and cost-effective way of preserving this community asset while ensuring that noise continues to serve as the workhorse of the Sudbury Public School System for the foreseeable future. To date, the project has been supported, obviously, by the school committee, but the Board of Selectmen, the Energy Committee, the Capital Improvement Planning Committee, the Permanent Building Committee, the Finance Committee, and both tonight and at the special election next Tuesday, it needs your support as well. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
Approval of Article 1.
Can you repeat that, please? Your mic wasn't on.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 1.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen urges...
Mr. O'Brien, a little closer to the mic.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen...
I don't think it's on. You can hear him? Oh, sorry. Go right ahead.
We'll try again. The Board of Selectmen urges your support of Article 1 tonight as well as next Tuesday at the special town election. Your support tonight and next week will facilitate Sudbury's participation in the FDA's Green Repair Program, as Mr. Beeler has detailed to you, which will allow for needed repairs and improvements to one of the town's major components of our educational infrastructure. The important thing to remember is that this program has a limited lifespan. It is a program that when all of the funds have been dispensed will go away, and there will not be another opportunity for Sudbury to participate in this sort of program due to the fact that the funding comes from the federal stimulus program and have been dispensed to special school building authority to be doled out to the schools that they see fit as being in need as the noise has been approved for. The other items that we think are important is that we would like to, at the Board of Selectmen, would like to acknowledge the extraordinary amount of work that has gone into preparing the application and the submission to the school building authority, and while the school committee and the permanent building committee were actively involved, the three primary people were Dr. John Brackett, Mr. Jeff Beeler from the Sudbury School Committee, as well as Mr. Mike Melnick from the Permanent Building Committee, and they have put in an extraordinary amount of time and effort to make sure that all of the particular details were submitted so that we would have the greatest opportunity of success, which when we learned that we were admitted to the program, proved that their time and effort was worth the investment that they made. And the last point that I would like to make is that the pursuit of this grant is in line with the recommendations that were made a few years ago in the report that was issued by the Budget Review Task Force. And the point that they made is that grants should be pursued by all town departments aggressively. And certainly the school committee and the permanent building committee have aggressively gone after this, successfully gone after this grant. And hopefully with your support, both tonight and next Tuesday, at the polls, the town will be able to proceed with obtaining the 35% funding and making the necessary repairs that have been detailed on this deal. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Would everybody who's standing in the aisle or behind that gate there, please take a seat. There's at least 15 seats right here in the middle. Go look at folks who have their hands raised. They all have seats available next to them. The fire law says that you cannot stand in this auditorium. You must be seated. And while that's happening, let me make one other announcement I neglected to make. If you're home watching on cable TV and you wish to vote on this article, I strongly suggest you leave now. And the reason is because you need adequate time to park, to come through the side door, to check in with the checkers at that door, to find your way and get a seat here in the auditorium, because when the vote is called, the police officers in the rear of the hall will lock those doors and you will not be allowed in. Now, with that frightening admonition, let us proceed. Before we hear from any other town officials, I will ask if anyone wishes to speak either for or against Article 1. Please raise your hand, not if you have a seat available beside you, but you wish to speak on the article. Yes, can bring that gentleman up.
Ted Fednishin, 32 Atkinson Lane, and chairman of Sudbury's Capital Improvement Planning Committee. We held a public hearing on this article on January 6th of this year and voted unanimously as a committee to support Article 1 as the Noise Screen Repair Program. We're very pleased to support this for two reasons. One, it will result in significant savings to Sudbury taxpayers because of the state's matching component. Secondly, we're very pleased to see a series of repairs and maintenance and renovation being done to a valuable town asset, which should clearly extend its life a number of years. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Please raise your hand. Yes, right there, please. Can you stand up, sir?
Hi, Rick Johnson, Bent Road. A couple of questions. Are we guaranteed the state funding?
Hang on. Someone from the school committee wish to take that? John Brackett, superintendent of schools.
The question was, are we guaranteed the state funding? And yes, we're guaranteed the state funding as a result of being in this program. We've been awarded. We've been invited to be a participant. They have, again, as Mr. Beeler said, they approve every step of the way, all of the language. They've been partners in this. And so not only will they fund it, but they are going to be participants in overseeing it as we go through the project.
Thank you. Why don't you stay there?
Sir? Thank you. Sure.
Yes.
Another question. In the Boston Globe article this Sunday, there was stated there would be $47,000 in maintenance cost savings. In tonight's presentation, there was $32,000 in energy savings. It's about $79,000. Can we use any of that to pay down the debt rather than having to borrow everything? Can we use that $79,000 a year and pay down debt rather than take an extra $790,000 over 10 years?
I'll let you... first of all, let me explain it as I understand it, and then if I'm incorrect... the town manager or the financial director will explain. These are entirely different funds. These are the savings that you're talking about are funds out of our basic operations for maintenance and utilities. So it's not a part of any debt payment. And to the extent that that money then is used to pay down the debt, it is not available within our basic operating budget to address number of teachers, class sizes, and all those issues that we've been concerned about.
Well, that's exactly my question. If we're saving it and we're not going to be able to, don't have to use it on the equipment, we can't pay down the debt with that? I know you want to use it for something else, but could we pay down the debt with it?
The savings, as I said, the savings would go back into, would stay in the fund, and it's not like we have excess money now that this savings would allow us to do other things. What this savings will allow us to do is to continue to keep the operating budget and the operating program as whole as possible. As you know, we've cut budget over the last 4 years. This will just allow us to cut the budget less.
Okay, thanks. Another question. It's mentioned there was a plan, a five-year plan. What's next, I guess, on repairs like this for the school systems? What's coming next year or the year after? Can someone speak to that?
I can probably start to address that. We've been working with the Capital Planning Committee in Sudbury for a long time now, and trying to identify large issues that can't be generally handled within the basic operations. We've identified, as you know, most of our buildings were built now or renovated significantly in 1999, so are in relatively good shape. That doesn't mean that the entire infrastructure is without needs. We've identified some needs that you will hear at town meeting in May around addressable fire alarm systems at Nixon. There are also some issues with the Nixon roof that we're going to have to look at, but it's not a it's not as substantive as what this project is, and we hope that within our budget and with some help by the CIPC that we'll be able to address those needs.
Anything major from the town coming?
I'll defer on that.
Is your mic on?
Is that better?
Nope.
Nope. Try again?
Yes.
Okay, just need to speak into it. There are a few projects out there on the horizon for the town. What to do with the police station still remains out there. We're looking for some work and report to be done under a grant we received to study combined facility, regional dispatch that may have some impact on that one. Beyond that, most of the older buildings, the town hall, Flynn Building and Fairbank, all might need some particular work done on them, but they have not been, projects have not been organized to begin to identify those or cost those out.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, that's starting to go far afield.
I'm sorry.
Article, no, that's okay. Article 1 before us is whether or not this town should vote on the noise school, which is not directly related to what's going to happen thereafter.
I was just trying to get a feel for what's coming up.
I understand.
A question on that roof scan. Can you pull that up, please? This is probably for the roofing consultants. If you take a look at it with all the circles with the wet insulation, if you could explain to the people, why not just repair what's wet and not rip off the whole roof?
Thank you. Hang on. Mr. Melli, did you want to address it, or should we have the roofing consultant address it? Okay. I need permission from the hall. This gentleman is hired by the town of Sudbury to consult on the roof, but he's not a resident of the town of Sudbury, and for that he needs a majority vote. All those in favor of hearing from him, raise your hand. Those opposed? Could the gentleman grab a mic and identify himself by name and address that question of why we need a new roof? Is that the question, Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, there's areas that are wet that need insulation replacement.
Why not fix them instead of getting a whole new roof?
Yeah.
Can you address that question, wherever you are? Can you come down here and just grab Boy Scout, give him a mic? And we just need your name for the record,
Hi.
Sir.
Jim Russo from Russo Bar Associates. So the question is, can we replace just the areas of wet insulation? You could attempt to do that, but it would be like quilt work trying to repair those areas. There's a significant amount of wet substrate contained within the roofing system, as you can see from the schematic roof area plan there, spread out over 15 different roof areas. You wouldn't really have any real guarantees on that work, other than perhaps a contractor's one-year warranty, as opposed to when you get a new roof, you get a 20-year full systems warranty from a manufacturer.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? I see no hand. Could you stand up, please? And could the Boy Scouts pass a mic?
Karen Palumbo, 11 Lafayette. What happens if the actual price comes in higher than we approve tonight?
What happens with respect to the SBAB reimbursement or with respect to the debt?
If we only approve a certain amount and the actual price comes in higher.
If, as a
town, we approve a certain amount of money and the price is higher,
who wishes to answer that
question? Where
do we
go from there?
Yes?
Council?
Who?
Town Council?
Once this gets to the competitive bidding, which is going to be necessary and the bids come in, if they were to come in excess of the amount that's being approved tonight, which we, and when I say we, I mean the PVC, does not expect to happen, We would then be talking about a reduction in scope. The numbers that the PBC has been working with have been designed with one thing in mind, and that is to make sure that we had to come out here and ask you folks to come out on an awful night like this one time. The goal of the PBC, if this is approved, is going to be to ensure as best as they can that all the numbers that come or that are related to this are going to be less than the $2.6 million number, which is really should, I think, or should be properly viewed as a not-to-exceed number. But their goal is going to be to make sure that it's less. In the unlikely event that the numbers come in higher, then it's going to be a discussion by the PBC School Building Committee about a reduction in project scope at that point in time. But nobody who's been involved with this expects to have to come back here and look you folks in the face and ask for more money on this project.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Could you stand up, please? And if the Boy Scout can come to the front of the hall here, a mark right to the front of the hall, and you can pass it right across.
Do you need my name?
And address, yes. Please.
Patricia Gothy, 24 Pinewood Avenue. If the scope of the project comes in under the $2.5 million, what happens to that money? Will it be reallocated as it has been in the past to other projects?
Mr. Brackett.
The question was, what happens if it comes significantly under the $2.6 million? We will bond only for the actual cost that are incurred. So if the project comes in at $2.4 million or even $2 million, that's the amount that we will bond for. This just gives a not-to-exceed number. It does not mean that we will spend that amount. It will be only that which is actually bid and incurred in the project. Does that answer your question?
And when Mr. Bieler said that we wouldn't have to come back here again, he meant at the town meeting. If it passes town meeting by a two-thirds vote, there will be an override question by majority vote this coming Tuesday. Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Can you stand up, please? Right on the aisle.
Laura Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. If the project isn't completed by the end of 2011, do we lose the funding?
Mr. Brackett.
The question was, what happens if it's not done by the end of 2011? Will we lose the funding? We have been talking with the MSBA about that, and the answer is probably not. As Mr. Bieler said, this is a brand new program, so they're feeling their way through. So they set the deadline of December 31st, 2011 for the completion of all of these projects. What they have found is that because of the timing that exists, that it is possible because of the approval like we're doing here in Sudbury, that the deadlines may be pushed. And so they have indicated that they are going to make sure, as long as the project is substantially underway and close to completion, that will not jeopardize the project itself. If we would sit on it and not do anything, then we might have a problem. The other thing that is important, and we didn't have enough time or we did not have the capacity to put in our presentation, is that there has been a tentative timeline and project development timeline already developed that we've been looking at. And obviously, from a standpoint of having workers on the roof and having to knock out windows and replace those, it would be to everyone's best interest, especially where children are involved, to have all of this work done during the summer project. So everything that we're doing is targeted to having as much done in the months of late June, July, and August. There will be some work that would be carried over into September, but that likely will be staged in an area that does not affect students, and it could involve, like in the boiler room, where humans don't often go. And so those kind of things may happen after September 1, but our goal is to have substantial completion by early September.
Yes. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes. Could you stand up, please, so the Boy Scouts can see you?
Hi. Sharon Jones, 57 Pratt's Mill Road. So are the grant funds given in the beginning or upon completion?
Mr. Brackett.
The MSP, the question was, when do the grants funds start to come in? The MSBA has changed the way that they are funding projects now. When we funded this building and when the town submitted for Loring and the middle school, the funding was very different, and that was kind of at the end of the project. Now what they do is, as the project begins, once there's approval and we start the project, we periodically submit bills that we have, costs that we've incurred to the MSBA, and they reimburse us for 35.42% of those costs, eligible costs, all the way through. So it's not at the end. It's kind of helping us offset the cost as we go.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? I see no one. Before the vote, I need to remind you of two things. Please don't leave after the vote so you can vote on Article 2, which is the last article. And secondly, this is a two-thirds vote because it involves borrowing. So I will ask all those in favor of the motion, as you see it in the view graph, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It's well more than a majority, the two-thirds, it's almost unanimous. It passes. And while we're, the presenter for Article 2, please come forward. And while we're waiting for Mr. Tyler, I see that our state representative is in the audience. He's to my far left. Tom Conroy from Wayland represents Sudbury also. Okay. Mr. Tyler has his motion, as well as being shown on the view graph. I have many copies of them right here. In addition, Mr. Tyler, they were on the table just outside the auditorium?
Well, they were when you checked in.
When you checked in, they were on the tables there. If you do not have one of these, could you raise your hand and we'd be glad to get one to you? I'll take care of it. I want you to start with the motion.
Hang on,
Mr. Tyler? Hang on. One second, yes. I see a lot of Article 2. How many pages is this? Two pages? Oh, it's all one page? Fine. Very good. Thank you. Yes. Please raise your hand if you need a copy of the motion that's about to be shown on the view graph, it's because we're not going to have Mr. Tyler read the entire thing. It's two-sided. Instead, he's going to move in the words as shown on the view graph because we've given you all copies of this. Could the two Boy Scouts come here? Can you come here? Yes, you. Here you go. Anybody who needs it, please raise a hand. Boy Scouts, give them to whoever's hand is raised. Just pass them down the aisle. Anybody else not have it? Please raise your hand and keep them raised. While he's doing that, they're doing that. We're going to ask Mr. Tyler to make his motion.
I move Article 2 as it appears in the handout and on the next slide.
Does it receive a second? It does. Mr. Tyler, we're going to start by, as we did with Mr. Beeler, telling us how this is different than what appeared in the warrant.
Well, what we talked about is we're going to have a brief introduction, and I'm turning the floor over to
the mic.
Yes, I'm sorry. Mr. Levington is going to start our presentation. He's going to talk about the beneficiaries. Then I'm going to take over from him, and I'm going to talk about the article and the changes.
Good evening. Dave Levington, 155 Knobscot Road. It's my job to tell you not how this complicated article got together and got improved. Ralph will do that. But to tell you what it will accomplish if we pass it tonight, and if it's passed by the legislature, comes back here, and we vote on it. This is you've heard this referred to as the Hamilton. It's not Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton, Massachusetts plan. It was passed. The legislature approved it. We find that it's a terrific plan. And so Mr. Tyler has prepared, and I've helped him in ways, a Sudbury version of it. And the things that make it really unique and terrific for us are two. It has costs that are fixed. I can tell you as the evening goes on how much it will cost you. We won't estimate it. We can tell you exactly what the costs are ahead of time. And it has a targeted benefit. We're not going to say it's to help people who need it. We almost know their names. We know all about who's going to get this and who they are. So you have a program, unlike most senior tax plans we've tried to develop, where we know how much it's going to cost and we know who's going to get the benefits. The costs are, we say, call it a bundle of money. We're going to get together a bundle of money, and it's going to cost each of us something to do that. Each of our tax bills is going to be raised by 0.5% or 1%. That's what we refer to as a burden shift. We're going to shift part of the burden for property taxes from some of the most needy seniors to all of us. If your property tax bill is about $6,000, it'll go up by $30. If it's $10,000, it'll go up by $50. If it's $20,000, it'll go up by $100. It'll be no more than that. The next year, if they wish, the selectmen will be able to raise that slightly. But you'll always know ahead of time what it's going to be. We're going to use that money not to help all seniors, but to help those who need it most. We're fortunate that we have new census data that now tells us how many seniors we have in town. There are about 2,000 of us. There are 1,241 families where one member at least collects Social Security. We're not going to try to help all the seniors because not all seniors need that help. The people we're going to try to help are those who already qualify for the state program called the Circuit Breaker. Most of you are not old enough to be really familiar with it. The Circuit Breaker was designed to see that seniors' taxes would not exceed 10% of their income. Every senior can make out their state income tax return, can apply for the Circuit Breaker. And if their income, if their tax is more than 10% of their income and they meet other qualifications, they can get a credit up to $970. In a lot of places in the state, that'll do it. In Sudbury, that doesn't do it. After getting the Circuit Breaker, a lot of our seniors are still very much hurt by property taxes. I said that. In order to qualify, you have to be, one of you has to be 65. Your income has to be less than $77,000 this year as a couple, or $51,000 as a single person. In addition, you have to have a home which is not assessed too high. For the Circuit Breaker, they have a fixed number. In this article, it has to be in the lower half of the town's assessed value. Say within 10% of the average, because if somebody is $5,000 over the average, they'll still qualify. But if your house has to be in the lower half of the town for assessed value. And you must live here for 10 years. If that happens, you would qualify for this article as well as the circuit breaker. Here's how it would work. An example, if your property taxes were $6,000, I hate reading from these things, but let me do it anyhow. If your income was $35,000, we'd like your property tax to be no more than $3,500. The circuit breaker would give you almost $1,000 of that, $970 this year, and that goes up every year. So you would be eligible under Article 2 for another $1,500 in benefits. That's the whole story. We're going to have $300,000, which you'll contribute to, and we'll contribute, give it to those people who need it, such as this example. However, if there are more people who need help than the $300,000 will provide, it will be divided equitably among them. So, you have a fixed cost program. It's going to just the people that you go to, and we hope you support it. Now, between the article that was in the warrant and the one we're voting on was a long voyage. Mr. Tyler is going to tell you about that.
First, I want to just talk about the necessary steps before this gets implemented. We have to approve it tonight. It has to get sent to the legislature. There'll be hearings in the legislature, a lot of discussion back and forth about whether they want to do it. Then they'll have to vote in the House and the Senate. It has to get signed by the governor. And then most importantly, it has to come back to the town of Sudbury and pass by a majority of the voters at either a regular or special election. We're targeting and hoping that by March 2012, we can have this back from the legislature. Their processes take time. There's a lot of moving parts in the legislature. They consider an enormous amount of legislation every year. So it's a very ambitious timetable to try and make the March 2012 deadline. So if we can make that deadline, the earliest that this would be able to be implemented would be for fiscal year 2013, and that's if we send it promptly to the legislature. And that's actually the reason why it's being considered here at the special town meeting, because if we were to wait to the town meeting, it's almost sure that we would be waiting until fiscal year 2014 before these benefits could flow to the seniors. So then the other important thing, and I want to emphasize on this program, after implementation begins, this program will sunset. It expires. It will cease to exist unless 3 years later at a town meeting it's reaffirmed by a majority of the town meeting members. So by that time, everyone will have seen its impact on their own taxes. They'll hear some stories about the benefits. Maybe we'll even see some retention of seniors in town, but we'll know what it is that we're about. And at any time, it can be revoked at the polls by the voters. And the way it's set up in this article, by a majority vote of the voters before it's reaffirmed, and thereafter by two-thirds, mirroring exactly the kind of thing that happens with the Community Preservation Act, which is once we've committed to giving seniors this type of tax break, it shouldn't be kind of at the whim of the voters that maybe they're going to make plans to stay in Sudbury because they're getting extra tax relief, and then suddenly it turns around because of the political climate, a few voters one way or the other. So that's the logic. This all got started. We mentioned Hamilton. It's a complicated bill that's before you. I hope you can appreciate that's what was passed for Hamilton. When the Warren article was put together, that was the model. It was just simply changed for Sudbury's situation. We think it was improved, made better. We allowed for inflation, for example, so we'd never have to go back to the legislature again. But since that time, we've been meeting with boards and committees and town staff to try and understand if there are other things that we needed to do that could strengthen it, make it better, and we've identified a number of them, and they're reflected in the motion. On the sheet that you got on the motion, on the second page, there's a listing of five. That listing didn't include the first two up there, and I want to talk about those. Those are in section one. The first thing is we didn't want to be replacing state dollars for the circuit breaker with Sudbury dollars, so we've made the adjustment that Mr. Levington talked about. That wasn't in the article in the warrant, but it is in the motion that was made today. And the second thing is that we want to preserve current exemptions. So, for example, if two neighbors, identical income, identical circumstance, but one was a veteran and one was not, the veteran would still get the advantage of having the veteran's exemption preserved. They wouldn't be equalized down, basically negating the veteran's exemption. So that was one of the changes also in Section 1. And then in all of the other sections, it's as described on the supplemental report, petitioner's report, of exactly what the changes are. Now, the first change here to simplify, where we basically are adopting the income limits of the circuit breaker tax credit, this is the fiscal year 2010 for the fiscal year, or I'm sorry, for the calendar year 2010 tax year. These are the income limits. Single, $51,000.
That's a total of 10. So can you tell us about how much longer you expect to be?
I would say about 6 minutes.
Does the hall wish to give Mr. Tyler 6 minutes? Please signify by raising your cards.
Thank you.
Those opposed. Go ahead, Mr. Tyler. Try to make it a little less if you can.
I will. I absolutely will. So if you'll see, the income limits in the original article were exactly these. And then we had provisions to define what that income is. It turns out that in the worksheet for the circuit breaker tax credit, they add in all that other income that was the section that we removed. It was unnecessary. It was section 6. And then in section 10, we had a complicated process because at the time I was putting this thing together to get it in the warrant, I didn't realize that the circuit breaker limits were in fact inflation adjusted, since they are. Section 10 wasn't necessary, so we replaced basically one sentence with what was accomplished in three different places in the article, trying to simplify it. So it's confusing, but it's a lot clearer now. So that's just, we had a very short window to get this onto the warrant, and we're adapting. The other thing that we heard as we were talking with people, they were uncomfortable with the original article in the sense that there was the fear of someone with a $2 million or $1 million condominium in Florida, $3 million in a Swiss vault somewhere not getting interest, gold bars somewhere else, and they didn't want those people to qualify, and you'll probably hear some people talk about that. Now, we have to remember that if they're dipping into this fixed pool of money, they're not taking any money away from taxpayers. It's not extra money that you're being asked then to put up. They're actually taking the money from the needy seniors who might be qualified for $1,500 benefit. Maybe they'd only be able to get $1,425 as a result of somebody being greedy. So at any rate, we don't think that's going to be a problem. There might be some instances, but we've provided in the revised article the ability for the Board of Assessors to make determinations as to whether people have excess assets to root out that sort of thing, which is he has $1 million condominium there, he's got Swiss bank accounts, whatever. Mr. Levington tells me he's pretty sure that the people who are currently filing for the circuit breaker that none of them have yachts in Florida, but there are people have these concerns. So we've addressed it, and we've addressed it by giving the Board of Assessors the power to, well, first of all, they, unlike in the original article, they have to approve these applications. Before, if you had met the income qualifications and everything else, you were automatically entitled. So we put, there's a decision process, and we believe that that will root out almost all of the fraud. If someone wants to ask, I can show you also copies of the current applications when people file for exemptions. Every one of them, the applicant, is signing under the penalties and pains of perjury. So it's serious business if you are asked questions on these applications and you make false statements if it's found out. So do people cheat on their taxes? I think some do. I don't think some do for $1,000, something like that. People do it for hundreds of thousands. We've also made, I think, one of the changes that I'd like to emphasize is changes for administrative efficiency. When we initially envisioned this, this was going to be 0.5% burden shift from all taxpayers. It turns out, because of the administrative concerns, it's now concentrated just among the residential property taxes, and that meshes with all of the processing that goes on in setting the difference between the commercial tax rate and the residential tax rate as best we can understand it now. Now, there may be some glitches, some fine-tuning that need to be done, and we've added a provision to allow that as well. So you're not getting to see all these slides I worked up. I'm wondering why I did that. Let me talk about some of the, we have a little bit more stringent age requirements than the circuit breaker. In the circuit breaker, only one has to be 65. In ours, if it's a joint application, that is two people own the property, the spouse has to be 60 or over, and that's because this is targeted at the senior population. We're also a little bit more stringent on the value of your home. In the circuit breaker, it's $764,000. In Sudbury, the average single-family home is $628,000. You add 10% to that, it makes it about $690,000. So there's some number of circuit breaker filers who will not qualify just based on those criteria. And as David mentioned, the limit this year is $970. Now, if you're in the average city and town in Massachusetts with an average property tax bill of around $3,000, being able to qualify for $970 of circuit breaker relief probably solves your problem. But if in Sudbury, where the average property tax bill is over $10,000, it doesn't have the same ability, and the legislature is never going to fund for towns like Sudbury. Is that my 6 minutes?
No, that's five.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry. I take it back. She informs me that's six.
Okay. Well,
you have 15 seconds to wrap up.
Okay, good. The Sudbury is an affluent community. 78% of the community is making over $75,000. 31% over $200,000. What we know about those who apply for the circuit breakers are that 145 of the 190, their Massachusetts net adjusted gross income before is under $25,000. The next 39 under 50, and only six above 50,000. So you can see that's a very needy population. We urge your support. This is the right thing for Sudbury. It's the right time to act, and it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 2.
Selectmen?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article. Excuse me. I'm losing my voice. The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article. This article extends our tradition of helping seniors in need. It utilizes the circuit breaker criteria, is definitely means tested, does not affect operational budgets, gives the Board of Assessors discretion over assets, allows us to address any unforeseen technical and administrative issues. And finally, it really continues the tradition of maintaining Sudbury as a diverse and caring community. Excuse my voice. So we urge you to support this. A lot of work has gone on this article between staff and the petitioners. We have some questions, but we think we have enough flexibility in this to make this happen. I think it's time that we support the seniors in need in the community. Sudbury has a long, long tradition of doing it, and we're in the forefront of the state of Massachusetts helping seniors in need. So we would hopefully support this. And again, I apologize for my voice. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 2? Could you stand up, sir?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. There's one clarification that I think needs to be made here, and I sort of apologize for this because not everybody in the hall is necessarily going to appreciate this point. But the town accountant will, and the tax assessor will. In Section 2, Paragraph E, where it talks about the maximum assessed value is no greater than the prior year's average assessed value of a Sudbury single-family home. Now, the word average in this context is ambiguous. There are two different kinds of averages that can be used. One is if you take the total assessed value of the town and divide it by the number of houses, you get something called the arithmetic mean. If you take the number of houses, the total number of houses, divide them in half, and say what is the assessment of the one in the middle, then that's called the median. Now, if I understood Mr. Levington's presentation correctly, he implied that the objective here was to make it the median. However, the word average is more often, when it's used alone, used to represent the arithmetic mean. And I think you probably ought to say which one you mean, the mean assessed value or the median assessed value of houses in Sudbury.
Mr. Tyler?
It's a very deliberate. We use the word average to mean mean. We understand that median is 50th percentile. If you got a different impression from Mr. Levington, I'm sure it was inadvertent. The 628,000 is for, I believe they call it use code 101, single family residential. It's the total value of all of them divided by the number of single family residentials. It is the average. Hamilton used the median, so we're a little bit more generous than Hamilton, and as I mentioned, we are less generous than the circuit breaker. There were many who urged us to adopt the limits of the circuit breaker, which would be about 10% higher than what we've adopted.
Well, Mr. Moderator, I would suggest that if the mean is what's meant here, that ought to be the word that's used. Now, okay. If the town council feels otherwise, or if the town accountant feels otherwise, then that's one thing. But I think that given that there is that ambiguity, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't clarify it for exactly what you do mean.
Mr. Tyler, I just have one question for you. Do you wish to change the word from average?
No, I think
we're all set. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Coe?
I would just...
Mr. Coe, you haven't been recognized, sir.
I'm sorry.
We're going to go on to another speaker, please. You've made your point. It was well taken. Mr. Tyler doesn't wish to change it. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes. Could you please stand up?
Steve Gabler, 28 Mossman Road. Now that we've clarified that we mean, by average, we mean the mean, can you tell me what percentage of the residences in Sudbury would be included in the average plus 10%?
One of you have the answer? Mr. Levington?
I don't know how to answer the... This was only used as a way of screening people who first meet the residential requirements, then meet the age requirements, then meet the income requirements. We then look to make sure that their house is in the lower half of the town. In my interpretation, we wanted to use a word that would fit best for the assessors. If Mr. Coe is right, and I have no reason to think he isn't, the assessors under Section 9 can change the word mean to median. They can make that sort of change.
Does that answer your question?
I think 100% of the people who qualify for the circuit breaker will qualify under this assessment.
Right. That I would agree with. The point I would make is that the difference typically between the median and the mean, 10% above the average, would include significantly more than 50% of the residences in the town.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Could you stand, please?
Thank you. Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road. Just a quick question. In Section 3, the presentation, unless I missed something, we kept talking about 0.5%, and Section 3 says 0.521%, which is a factor of 2. If you could explain that.
Yes. In my underestimation of the time, we flipped through that slide, but the first year... as in modeling this after the Hamilton bylaw, and David mentioned that there would, you know, could be higher in subsequent years, but the first year is 0.5%, and then at the discretion of the selectmen, for whatever reason, in subsequent years they can raise that up to 1%, and that would mean for the $6,000 tax bill, that would be a $60, so it'd be $6,060. For the $10,000 tax bill, the maximum cost it could ever be is $10,100. So I didn't mean to skip over that. It was inadvertent. It's one of the slides I skipped. Sorry.
I didn't think you meant to skip it, but so the selectmen can do that without a vote of town meeting, or?
Yes, it's their
administrative change.
It's much like they now have discretion in setting the tax during the tax classification hearing, the difference between commercial and residential taxes. That can actually make quite a difference in the commercial tax base, and that's based on their judgment as to what the right thing to do is, and we're trusting them with the same kind of judgment. We think by that time they'll have a needs assessment coming back from the applications where they'll be able to identify, at least for the last year, here's the amount of need. We had $300,000, let's say, at 0.5%. Our needs now are $450,000. We'd like to meet more of them. The selectmen might decide to go up a little bit. They might decide, if times are tough, not to.
Okay. Thanks, Ralph.
Yes, please stand. Mark? Oh, yes.
Hi. I'm actually...
I'm sorry. I just need your name and address for the record.
Abla Shoker, and that's Mossman Road, 240 Mossman Road. I'm actually asking about Section 2, number D, the residency in the house for 10 consecutive years. We have actually lived in our house for 20 out of 25 years, but the last 5 years... we were away and then came back. So does it apply for us, you know, with the rest of the conditions being met?
Did everyone hear the question?
The question was, if you're a long-time resident, but for circumstances, a variety of circumstances, for the last 5 years you've been out of your house, perhaps renting it because you've perhaps been on assignment overseas, would you qualify? And the answer is that in modeling this after Hamilton, that wasn't foreseen. So as it's written now, that individual would not qualify. Whether that's something that should be taken into account, I can't tell you. But the way it's written now, that would not count. It has to be your residence
It has been our residence for 20 years consecutively. We've lived 20 years in the property.
That's consecutive years, but 5 years earlier. Hang on.
No, let's see what town council says.
Mr. Tyler and ma'am, we have a different opinion up here. Despite what was meant, it doesn't mean that the 10 consecutive years had to be immediately before you're filing it.
Okay.
So it's the opinion of town council that you would qualify.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Yes, please stand.
Thank you. Bill Keller, 31 Churchill Street. When I first got involved in town government, it was on the Board of Assessors. So I've read these kinds of proposals over the years. And some of them we've enacted. They were modest, but they never really addressed the dire need that our seniors have for senior tax relief. More recently, there were some proposals, and there were arguments against them, and some of them didn't pass. But I'd like to compliment the folks that have worked on this, that they have really addressed those issues that held back town meeting, at least in my opinion, in prior years. And they have put together a proposal here that I think will address what there is no doubt in my mind is a significant need in our senior community. And it pays for it the way it should be paid for. And that is all the rest of us are going to take a few extra bucks out of our pocket, and we're going to help the seniors afford their tax bills. And I urge everyone to vote in favor.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Could you please stand up? Right to your right.
Mr. Moderator, Edward Creech, 659 Dudley Road. Mr. Moderator, we've heard in detail thorough coverage of what and how. I'd like to take a few minutes to speak to why. It wasn't planned this way, but in the town of Sudbury, the real estate tax is a severely penalizing regressive tax. For those of us that have owned houses in this town for a long period of time, the value has appreciated, scandalously appreciated. The place I lived in, where I now live, I moved into 57 years ago. I wouldn't dare begin to calculate and mention to you how much it has appreciated. However, that appreciation brings with it the penalty of the increase in real estate taxes. And the pension that I modestly but prudently planned to take care of my needs in my post-working years was calculated 25 years ago. There has been no escalation in that, but there has been a constant escalation in the real estate tax. The appreciation and the value of my dwelling has little to do with the costs associated with daily living. Cash flow is what determines that. What is the fuel bill, and what is the bill for your groceries and things of that sort. Appreciation of your real estate is a paper gain, which is of value only when liquidated. And in the case of some that have lived in their same dwelling for many, many years, liquidation means going out from under the roof that you're familiar with. So those that have dwellings here, not bought for investment purposes, but bought as a home to be lived in for a long time, suffer from a very, very severe penalty in the regressive nature of the real estate tax that continues to increase while the cash flow available to sustain decent living standards does not. It remains fixed. In the town of Sudbury, there is very, very good reason for the real estate values to appreciate. In recent reports over the past month, two studies were made that were published. One indicates the most affluent towns in the 351 cities and towns of Massachusetts. And lo and behold, the town of Sudbury was number 5 on the list. Not number 1, number 5 out of 351. So we have a circumstance where we have a town with residents with the affluence to afford better things. Those of us that live in the town share that desire. We would like the best educational system. We would like a good parks and rec system. We would like all of those good things. I did when I worked on the Permanent Building Committee for 7 years, during which time we built 5 elementary schools and 1 middle school. Gave up our volunteer time to do that type of thing to enhance the educational standards. So it should not be taken that those who find it difficult to support the quality of education, the quality of the real estate taxes as they are imposed today, may say it becomes penalizing and difficult to maintain other standards of living unless one liquidates one's home. So for the 10 years that we've been talking about this, I think there are reasons that it should be done. And I think there are very good reasons. It should be done because it's right, and it should be done now.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Way in the back there, could you stand up? Okay. The question has been called. Does it receive a second? It does. All those who wish to speak and add something new to this discussion, please raise your hand. I see no one. All those in favor of the... I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. There's one hand being raised. I'm sorry. This requires a two-thirds vote to call the question. All those in favor... does anybody else wish to speak? No. Ma'am, could you stand up, please?
Hi, Alyssa Carroll on Cider Mill Road. I do know that there are people in this town that have also gone through changes in their income in the recent years due to the financial situation and the economy. And through either job loss or having to take pay cuts, could be also struggling. I'm wondering why the tax bill is aimed only at seniors and doesn't take into account others, and who will now therefore be required to foot the bill.
You wish to have an answer to that question? Or was that just a statement?
Was it rhetorical?
It was?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Levington.
I understand the question, why aren't we helping all the people in need, which we clearly everyone would like to. For that reason, we're very clear that this isn't to help all seniors. There are 1,200 some families in town who are seniors. Most of those will be paying this. We are helping about 250 families, who are all seniors, not those who are younger, who have no other options. They have nothing to look forward to that will make things better. If we could be perfect and help everyone we'd like to, we're trying to be practical and help those we can.
Yes, just by way of explanation, the moderator has discretion after the call of the question not to entertain it if he thinks or she thinks that there hasn't been sufficient discussion. Where there was only one person raising her hand, I decided to exercise that discretion. We can now move on to the vote on Article 2. This is a majority vote, so I will ask all those in favor of Article 2 as it appears in the view graph to signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It passes by an overwhelming majority. Before I take a motion to dissolve, I'd like to remind all of you, please drive very carefully. Other than when you came in, there's probably a lot of black ice out there now, so drive carefully. Is there a motion to dissolve the special town meeting? Is there a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. It's passed overwhelmingly. Thank you all very much.